American composer Sarah Kirkland Snyder has received universal acclaim for her uniquely beautiful works, many of which transcend the traditional concepts of classical music. Back in 2008, she co-founded New Amsterdam Records, which has championed other like-minded composers and performers with hundreds of concerts and recordings. And Sarah's latest recording project with New Amsterdam is a thought-provoking and deeply emotional version, I should say, of the traditional Mass, which is called the Mass for the Endangered. Sarah Kirkland Snyder joins us now to preview the album and the music on it. Welcome, Sarah.
Thanks so much for having me, Brad. Great to be here.
Some folks may remember you and your husband, Stephen Mackey, who is also a composer, when you were composers in residence down at the Bowling Green New Music Festival, just a few miles south of here.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. It was a joy then to hear, you know, some of your works performed live in concert, but also a joy to hear this incredible piece of music. Now, we just have to lay out what it's all about. It's called The Mass for the Endangered. You did this with the poet Nathaniel Bellows, who you worked with for your song cycle, Unremembered. This is called A Hymn for the Voiceless and the Discounted, A Requiem for the Not Yet Gone. I wonder if you can just give us an overview of what this piece is about.
Sure, yeah. So Trinity Wall Street initially came to me with the idea of reimagining the Mass. And they asked to have two of the movements in Latin, but said the rest I could set whatever text I wanted. It could be on any topic that I wanted. So I spoke with Nathaniel about this, and he immediately suggested that we focus on endangered animals and the global environmental crisis. And I just thought, of course. I mean, what bigger crisis is our world facing, really, at this point in time than this sixth mass extinction that we're going through? So Nathaniel wrote a lot of text that was inspired by the traditional meaning of the Catholic Mass movements. We sort of used the Catholic Mass as a prism through which to eulogize, worship, and celebrate endangered animals, and to plea to a higher source for intervention, except we think of that higher power as being nature, or Mother Nature, Mother Earth itself, rather than God.
Now, you mentioned that a couple of the movements are actually the original Latin from the Mass. That's the Gloria, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the Sanctus Benedictus.
And the Sanctus Benedictus. Was there any specific reason that the commissioners wanted to keep those in the original text?
That's a really good question. I don't know the answer, actually. I should have asked them. I assumed they said that they wanted them for their actual services.
Oh, okay.
So I guess they may have been taking it out of context, perhaps, you know, just having it as music, not necessarily related to the themes about which it was written. But
the music itself certainly reflects the themes that are addressed in the other movements of the work. You've got six different sections here. You include all the ordinary movements from the traditional Mass, but you also have the Alleluia, which is not always sung.
Right.
It's interesting how these texts kind of transform the original idea of the Mass setting. Like in your credo, it turns from a sort of an affirmation of faith to a call to action.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about your collaboration, your work with Nathaniel Bellows in deciding how you were going to transform these movements?
Yeah, sure. Nathaniel and I both studied, you know, read about the history of the Mass and and the meaning of the different movements. And then I really left it up to him. He made a decision about how he wanted to address the text and update it, you know, or not, or, you know, stray from the original meaning, to what degree. You know, of course, we were thinking about nature and the global environmental crisis rather than faith in God. For instance, with the credo, I was so moved by the way that he just had this list of statements.
It's really emotional text, the way that you said it. Like, for instance, he says, we believe in all who are offset. We believe in all who are outcast. We believe in all who are voiceless. It goes on, stranded, stalwart, fearless. All of those keywords, they're very strong emotional words. And you bring to that, in my estimation, a music that really sets each word apart, but you do it in such an interesting way with the voices that harkens back to even the music of the Renaissance a little bit. I mean, occasionally, like, one of the lines will do a little bit of a plain chant, sometimes by itself. I assume that was your intent.
That was intentional, yes. Very much so. That was my idea, to weave in some of the Latin occasionally. I wanted it to feel like, I mean, some of the Latin in the credo movement, I wanted it to feel like it was this kind of ghostly reflection on, you know, these specific lines, and I await the coming of the world to come. That's an original line from the traditional Mass, and I just thought it was very fitting for this, for what we're reflecting on in this Mass. So I thought it would be interesting to just weave some of that in a chant-like way to make that connection clear. But yeah, Nathaniel's language is very vivid and emotional, and that's why I've always loved working with him, because it's elegant and timeless, but it's also very direct and visceral.
I'm struck by the drawing that he also did, which you include in the program book, which is kind of like a stained glass window with all these different endangered species. It's not just animals, but you also have things like clouds and icebergs and things like that, the whole global environment that is at risk.
Mm-hmm.
Did he draw that? I mean, was that a response to the whole project itself, or was that?
Yeah, that was interesting. That came after he wrote the text. And he and I, when we did Unremembered together, he created visual imagery and illustrations for each movement, for each poem that he sent me. And those images really inspired me. And I've had him since do some illustrations for other pieces. So it's become a sort of natural part of our working relationship to have some illustrations to talk about when we're talking about his text. And I wasn't expecting him to do this necessarily, but he just sent this to me one day and said, oh, by the way, I made this, you know, this triptych of endangered animals. And it was just stunning. And I couldn't believe, yeah. So I wanted to make it the cover art. And we featured it in the first video that we created for Kyrie. And this visual designer, Deborah, brings all the animals to life, as it were, in the video. But I didn't have it to inspire me as I was writing the music, but it beautifully encapsulates the music visually, I think.
And you mentioned the video. There are more videos to come, right?
Yeah, there's going to be a video for each movement, actually. When COVID happened and we realized we wouldn't be able to tour the piece, we took some of the funding we had set aside for touring and put it into creation of these videos. And it's been such a wonderful collaborative experience for me working with Deborah Johnson. She's this incredible video designer, and she's taken lots of wonderful ideas about sacred geometry and phylogenetic trees and these interesting ways of looking at the topics and illustrating them visually. It's been really wonderful.
You mentioned COVID, and, you know, that's sort of the cloud hanging over everything these days.
Absolutely.
I mean, it almost feels like humanity as we know it is an endangered species with everything that's going on.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about how that has affected your life and your view and your making of music over the past several months?
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be quite honest, I found it very difficult to compose the last few months. Some of that was logistical because I've had my kids home and, you know, needing homeschooling or activity structuring, but a lot of it was kind of a crisis of how can I be composing right now when everything is falling apart? I mean, COVID is a zoonotic disease, you know, one that jumped from animals to humans. And after all the research I'd done about the environmental crisis, it just felt like, everything really is, it's hard not to feel like the world is falling apart, you know. Parts of the world are literally on fire. You know, when COVID happened in the early months, it was Australia. Now it's California. And it's difficult sometimes as an artist to sit down in your workspace and tune all of that out, you know? So you have to find a way for it to become, you know, fuel that helps you express something. And sometimes it's just too difficult. Sometimes you just need to read and educate yourself. And I found the first few months of COVID, that was all I could do. Now I'm getting back into writing again, and it's coming a little bit easier, but it's still, to be quite honest, this has been a tough time for me creatively.
Yeah. And I've heard that from many other composers and performers who are out there right now. I have to say, in listening to this work, while it's meant to raise alarm bells to a certain extent, it's meant to raise awareness and remind people of how fragile this world is. At the same time, there's something strangely comforting about the piece. And I think that that is due to your music. There's always a sense of optimism, should I say? Would you characterize that as part of what you do as a musician, part of your style?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think so. I think at heart, I'm a realistic optimist, I guess you could say, a pragmatic optimist. But I think even with my darkest music, I like there to be some aspect of warmth or light that gives meaning to the darkness, you know, and sort of, there needs to be hope I mean, I certainly have experienced times without hope, but I think even in a really dark piece of music, at some point there needs to be some glimmer of hope that makes, that gives meaning to the darkness and also allows you to sort of hang on to something else besides the darkness. I think there are certain pieces of music for me when that doesn't happen, I don't enjoy the music. When it's only dark and there's never a glimmer of light, I have a hard time with that. So in this case, you know, with this piece, hope is so essential because we have to turn that. We can still make an impact. I don't think we can say that we can turn this crisis around completely, but we can make a major impact if we act quickly and decisively. So there really has to be that sense of hope in the music that, you know, all hope is not lost. Like, we can still affect some positive change.
Before I let you go, we should just mention the vocal ensemble and the conductor of the piece, because they both do just a magnificent job on this recording.
They really do, yeah.
It's an English vocal ensemble called Gallicantus, which I was not familiar with. Can you tell us a little about your work with them?
Yeah, so Gabriel Crouch is the conductor of the group, and I met him... he teaches at Princeton. He's head of choral activities at Princeton, and my husband also teaches at Princeton. So I just got to know him socially, and of course got to hear his music. He brought his ensemble, Gallicantus, to Princeton for some concerts, and they're just incredible, just some of the most extraordinary vocal artistry I'd ever heard. So unfortunately, with Trinity Wall Street, it wasn't possible for us to record together. So when that became clear, I asked Gabriel if he would consider doing this. And Gallicantus had actually not done any pieces with female singers yet. They just specialized in early music for men's voices. But he was very open and excited about the idea and, you know, brought together a lot of singers, all singers in London, with whom he had worked many times over the years. Gabriel had been a professional singer since he was a child. He, in fact, sang at Charles and Diana's wedding. And so he grew up knowing, you know, all of the really the top choral singers in London and brought them together to make this ensemble. So they're just fabulous singers, and they've all known each other a long time, and it was wonderful to be in the room with them and to see that camaraderie flourishing as they were making the music. It was really fun.
Well, having thumbed through the score for your mass myself, I can attest to the incredible work that they did, because it's not easy looking at it on the page to realize, but this recording itself just sounds so directly accessible. I mean, you automatically get a soulful connection with what's going on here. So it's just a wonderful listen. Aww.
Thank you so much. That's very kind. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Now, if folks want to download it, should they go to Bandcamp and get it that way? What's the best way to get that?
I mean, I love Bandcamp. As a co-director of a record label, Bandcamp is as good as it gets. They're super artist-friendly and very supportive to artists, much more so than streaming platforms. So Bandcamp is always my vote, but if you're a Spotify file, then it's on Spotify and Apple Music and wherever you can find streaming music, it should be there.
Okay. Well, we'll link to all of that from our website. And I should mention, if you do go to Bandcamp, folks can subscribe to New Amsterdam there, right? You have it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm biased, but I'm a big fan of the subscription. It entitles you to a lot of great content early before anybody else, and you can discover lots of great music that way.
Composer Sarah Kirkland Snyder's Mass for the Endangered, available now. And as I mentioned, we'll link to all of that from our website as well. I want to thank you, Sarah, for spending some time with us and talking about this music. So much to appreciate and unpack here. We could talk for hours about all of this, but I think the best thing for folks is just to take a listen and to wrap themselves up in this remarkable music.
Oh, thank you so much, Brad. Really appreciate it.